people don't have enough vocabulary to truly express the subtleties and the nuances when it comes to giving feedback. Can everyone give detailed, honest, clear, valuable, impactful feedback at the level that you expect in English? Probably not, because they've been operating in this bubble and no one has ever given them feedback on how they come across. So people have been working in an echo chamber.
Let's rock into 2023. We're Crystal and Eve Liesen. We do so with a guest who is especially famous among the famous. Buffy Duberman makes sure that all over the world people understand what those Dutchies actually mean. In this episode, we're going to talk about how to transition from a scale-up where Dutch or any other language is the main language to a company where English is the primary one.
First of all, thank you for listening again. And if you're listening for the first time, welcome. We hope you keep on listening. So go, go, go and subscribe to our podcast. Criticism, praise, questions, ideas for guests, everything is welcome. Just send us a DM via LinkedIn or email to info@peoplemastermind.com.
We received very good feedback on a recent survey, so thanks everyone. Our NPS, or Net Promoter Score, is 68, so that's quite high.
It's sky high, Crystal.
Yeah, and we received a lot of great input for new topics. Some people suggest we could be more critical and share our own opinion a bit more.
Looking forward.
And people would love to have an English People Masterminds podcast every month.
Except for one person.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That person said that our English is, well, terrible.
Terrible.
And that we would lose a lot of listeners if we continue with it.
Hey, we're up for a challenge.
We're up for a challenge. It's not a coincidence then, of course, that we welcome Buffy Duberman to the show. It's an honor to have you here.
Oh, I'm the one who's so honored. Thank you so much. And thank you so much for taking the big, bold step of embracing the new year with this new fabulous challenge of doing this in English. Good for you. I'm proud of
thank
you already.
Thank
Good
you.
For you. You can either stay thinking small and keep to your own language, or you can take a risk and do it in English. Good for you.
Yeah, let's go for it.
Absolutely. Go big or go home.
Exactly, exactly. And Eve Liesen is going to try to summarize you in a couple of sentences.
Okay. Yeah,
otherwise we'll still be here in half an hour.
So here we go. Buffy Duberman is born in Brooklyn, New York. She decided to live in the Netherlands after a one-night stand with a hot Dutchie in Barcelona. After working at the most prestigious language academy for nearly 11 years, Buffy decided to become the first personal English coach in the Netherlands. She's coaching artists, CEOs, celebrities, athletes, TED Talk speakers, and many more. And in times of war, every word counts. That's what she said, and she would love to coach politicians. Well, Crystal, she should coach Mark Rutte.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
He has my number.
That would be nice. And she doesn't only know how to speak English, but she also knows how to sing in English. And she also gets criticized on her outfits, her age, her career, her ass. Really, Buffy?
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? What others think of her is none of her business. That's what she wrote on Instagram. So go, Buffy. Is this about correct?
Really, really well done. Thank you for mentioning my ass, of which I'm very proud. My husband calls me Julo and not J-Lo because I'm Jewish. So obviously that's a really important part of our relationship. But so thanks. Yeah. And, you know, I am all about taking risks, and what people think of you is truly none of, you know, it's really none of my business what people think. There's only a few group of people who's a small group of people, and I value their opinion immensely. And for all of the keyboard warriors who have comments about my looks or about my age, you know, I hope they have a great life.
Love that way of thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you speak fluent Dutch as well.
I do.
What was the hardest thing for you in learning Dutch?
I think it was really hard because I lived for Prague for a year before I came to the Netherlands. So I was only speaking Czech, and I didn't go to America in
between. You speak Czech as well?
Yeah, I did at the time. It was 1990. I started the first language academy in Prague. That's another story. So I was only speaking Czech, and then I was learning Dutch. I got 10 hours of lessons at Regina Caeli, the language academy, and I had a very patient boyfriend who would take me to the Albert Heijn and he would give me an apple and he would say apple and I would say apple. And then before we knew it, there were like people watching us and clapping because they thought it was performance art. They thought this was this new art form. And I just, you know, I'm an intelligent person and I've learned a lot of languages. And I just remember feeling very, very small when I went to the grocery store the first time without my boyfriend to buy groceries on my own. And I made my list and I was buying things all by myself. And there was one thing on my list I couldn't find, and that was the Afwasborsten. I couldn't find the Afwasborsten. So I gathered all my courage. And for the first time, I went to this 17-year-old boy, you know, covered in acne. And I said to him, Goedemorgen, meneer. Ik kan de borsten niet vinden. Waar is de Afwasborsten? And he just looked at me and he started laughing. And I didn't know why. So, you know, when my clients who are all very, very high performance people, you know, when they say, I really feel small in English, I don't feel like myself in English, I can't find the right words, I'm really smart in my own language, you know, I'm on the same team. I have the exact same thing in Dutch.
That's a strength.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. As you know, we work with a lot of scale-ups. And scale-ups, they have people of all kinds of nationalities on board, mostly from day one. So English often is just a primary language from day one as well. But sometimes it also starts with as a company with a lot of Dutchies from day one. And then suddenly they hire their first, let's say, developer from Greece or a German marketing lead. And before you know it, they struggle how to get that right. So often founders then feel like, hey, these people can learn Dutch, right? That's what you did, Buffy. So
sure.
So it's possible.
Yeah, why it should everyone else in the company adapt?
Yeah, so why should we?
Well, that's a question. So I think that you have to look at it from the perspective of here in the Netherlands, everyone has grown up with music in English, with movies in English. And it's not like we have done that in Greece, or in Greek or in Norwegian. So people from Norway were not surrounded by Dutch growing up. People from Greece were not surrounded by Dutch. They don't have that passive understanding that people here have in English. So it's much easier, obviously, for people here to step into English than it is for someone from Greece to step into Dutch. It's something that they weren't exposed to a lot in the media as a child. So they don't even have the basic sounds and were not exposed to ch at a very young age, probably. And I think that, you know, people really need to think of what is really involved when it comes to switching over. And before you even take that step, you know, be very clear on why. Why do you want to do things in English? What are the goals? And what steps are you willing to take to get there? It's a big decision.
Yeah, it is. It is. But I can also imagine from a company point of view, if you want to grow, I mean, a lot of scale-ups are fast growing. They want to go international.
Sure.
That it's
sure.
like a... It makes sense to make that step,
of course,
to switch to English instead of
but you have to
Dutch.
Do your products and your services justice. You have to have just as high a professional level in English as you would in your own language. And I think that's where people miss the mark. They think, I'll throw my website on DeepL and and it's fine. We're good to go. And I, you know, I'm a big fan of going from DeepL to people. It's really important that we get the flair that you have in your own language to get that in English. You know, that takes skill, that takes time, that's a craft. And it's people don't have enough vocabulary to truly express the subtleties and the nuances when it comes to business English, when it comes to giving feedback. You know, if you say my company is in English, wonderful, but is the entire onboarding process in English? Can everyone give detailed, honest, clear, valuable, impactful feedback at the level that you expect in English? Probably not, because they've been operating in this bubble and no one has ever given them feedback on how they come across. So people have been working in an echo chamber.
Yeah.
They're speaking English. No one is giving them feedback. So they assume, I'm doing it great because no one has told me otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
So my thing is, no feedback does not mean no mistakes. It means you're working with very nice people who don't know and don't care.
Yeah.
But when you operate in international waters, to navigate through those waters, you really have to understand the finesse, the nuances, the subtleties of business English. And one more thing that Dutch people really forget, and this is something that you have in Dutch, in Spanish, in Italian, in French, in German. We do not have this in English. Is this built-in formality? Like, you know if it's an u situation or a you situation.
Yeah.
Many languages have a formal and informal way of saying you. In English, we do not. No. We use other words. I train people, you know, many times we start an email with, I hope this finds you well. We always start with a thank you or an icebreaker. And Dutch people always say, ja, kan mij wat schelen. I don't give a shit. I hope this finds you well. Boeie. And I'm like, babe, this is our u. This is how we start with an u.
It's being polite. Like,
right. And Dutch people will find that very over-exaggerated in their formality, but they don't realize this is all we have. This is how
you should do.
One of the ways, one of the many ways, that we express formality in English.
Can you give us another example of expressing formality?
Yes, yes. Oh, how much time do you have, honey? I have courses on this. But there's the example from ending your email with, I hope I have informed you enough. Now, shocking news. I'm glad we're all sitting down. But, you know, English people don't speak Dutch. I know. Crazy. So we do not know that this is a translation of Ik hoop u voldoende geïnformeerd te hebben. So we see this in an English perspective. And we see, I hope I have informed you enough. We interpret that as, this is all you're getting.
Yeah.
I hope
Shut
it's
up.
Enough. Don't let the door hit your ass on the way out. Basically, that's it. I'm done with you. We are very client-centered and client-centric in our communication, hopefully in business English. So we always end with, should you require further information? If you have any questions, don't hesitate to reach out. Please don't hesitate to contact me. I'm here for you. That kind of idea. That leaves the door of communication open. But I hope I have informed you enough. And then even better, meaning worse, you know, ending with greetings. We have greetings at Christmas time, season's greetings.
Yeah.
So these people are reading
Christmas
these
cards.
And they see greetings. They're like, oh, it's Christmas in March in Amsterdam. Oh, that's nice.
Interesting.
Right. Or you know, greetings, Earthling, take me to your leader when the UFO lands and the alien steps out. You know, greetings from Planet X, you know, the bad Star Trek movies. We don't say that. So I think that this is just an example. We say kind regards. You can build in intimacy in how you sign off. You can start with regards, kind regards, and then warm regards. You can build intimacy just in those subtle ways of signing off on an email.
Yeah.
Those are things that people don't know about. Those are things that are not taught at school. And I think a big misconception is people think, I have a Cambridge certificate. My business English is great. Your Cambridge certificate, congratulations, first of all, well done. That got you through a very predictable, standard testing situation, working through in a very standard way of learning. It's very often taught for the test. Business English is very not spontaneous. It's very high pressure. It's very
real life is different.
Real life throws you curveballs every 5 minutes, and can you catch them?
Yeah.
Your diploma is not going to help you navigate through these
it's not just
murky
the solution.
Waters. No, not
I
always.
Do believe that many Dutch people overestimate their English.
I agree.
Level, their level of English. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, every year you have the European Proficiency Index. That's that test throughout Europe of all the European countries and how high they score on this test. The Netherlands is always in the top three. But people don't, and so they're like, oh, why do you have such a long waiting list? We're number three, we're number one. But what people don't realize is this test is multiple choice. Mm-hmm. So if you suck, and it's run by volunteers. So if you're bad at something, you're not going to say, hey, I'm going to sign up to be tested on this because I'm bad at it. So it's a multiple choice, and it reinforces the very, very strong passive skills that Dutch people have. Dutch people's eyes and ears are excellent. You read it, you get it. You hear it, you get it. Multiple choice tests reinforce this. But when it comes to crafting a well-formulated email or a proposal or crafting a presentation or a pitch for maximum value and impact, that's a whole different story.
Yeah, that's different. If you understand like the Netflix in English or the English subtitles, that's different from actual speaking.
Right. It's receiving information instead of actually activating it.
Yeah. Well, what I see in practice is that sometimes management sort of knows, okay, we need to transition to English and this is why we find it important. But do we then need to compromise on the content and quality of our work? How does that work?
Yeah, I think you need to really be willing to invest. And I think it's a long game. I think it is not, you know, just add water and stir instant English. You know, it's English o'clock. You know, that's bullshit. It's like learning any skill. So many people, you know, they call me, they're like standing on the Wimbledon court and they want to win and they've never held a tennis racket before. So, I mean, let's really talk about investing in your team, investing in skills.
Yeah.
That's one of the reasons why I developed Communication Nation, because my waiting list, you know, I coach a lot of CEOs and startups and scale-ups and executives, and I've been asked so much for coaching, and I just took all of my knowledge and I put it in this, in the world's first business English platform and app. Because you need to learn it, you need to use it, and you need to, the third part is to get feedback on how you're using it. And that's what people miss, is they don't have anyone giving them clear and honest feedback. Yeah. I just did a Rock Your Business training with a company, for example. And in my training session, it became clear, which they had, these people had been working together for 12 years, and they had never realized that half of the team had a spell check in their Word documents in British English, and the other half had American English.
Ah, yeah.
So in the same company, mails were being sent out with two different spelling, two different spelling systems. And people say, now, is dat nou zo erg? And, you know, for Dutch people, that's like, als ik gewoon mijn versie van Nederlands spreek, en dan ga ik heel even over naar het Vlaams, en dan ga ik terug naar Nederlands. That's stort in beetje. You hear that kind of difference, and that distracts from your message. And there's no need for that. There's no need for that. And they didn't even know that. For 12 years, that had been going on until they came to my course.
New in this podcast is a question from our listeners. So in a second, you hear which question our listener Iris, in this case, has for you, and she wants to learn something. Talking about learning, let's put our sponsor Lapaya in the spotlight, because they're all about learning. Evelies, do you know them?
Yes, of course I do. They help organizations and teams develop, and they create personalized learning programs. I worked with them in the past, and I must say that was amazing, because we had some struggles with first-time managers giving feedback, but also communication skills, and their platform is amazing.
So do you want to know more about Lapaya and, for example, about their training for first-time managers or for employees in communication and problem-solving skills? Go to lapaya.com. Okay, Buffy.
Iris has a specific question
for
Iris.
You. Hi, Iris.
Part of office life are the water cooler chats and the office jokes.
Yeah.
And the humor is often an expression of culture. Mm. So maybe sometimes hard to understand for non-natives. Yeah. And it makes them feel like they don't fully belong.
Yeah.
And Iris asks how to deal with that.
Yeah, that's a really good question. Thank you for asking, Iris. I think humor is something that does not always translate well. A couple years ago, I worked very intensely with Yandino Asperat. He wanted to do a set in New York. And there were a lot of his jokes that we really worked on adapting for an American audience, because things here would be considered more acceptable, perhaps, than they would. Yeah. And of course, you have the culture now. I'm a very proud member of the woke mob. You know, there's certain things that are not said anymore. There's certain things that are considered to be disrespectful that you also have to take that into account. It's funny because I was reading an article on the BBC where someone had to do everything in English because one person walked into the room and they had to do everything in English. And when that person left, they heard them go into their own language and that room came to life. She heard people relax. She heard people tell more jokes. They could be more of themselves in their own language.
Yeah, totally different.
And
vibe.
I think at that water cooler, the copy machine, or, you know, I'm so old, at the fax machine, when you meet together, I think it's really important to say we're in this together and we're gonna try, and it's gonna be a very bumpy road, but we're all in the same car. We're all in the same bus. So for the water cooler moments, you can say, "Hey, I heard this joke in Dutch. It's really funny. I'm gonna try to translate in English. You can tell me how bad it is." Like, you can make it the joke into another joke by, you know, trying a really bad translation, as long as you don't say things like, I was getting a tour of a new client's office, and his secretary introduced me to her boss, and she said, "Oh, this is my boss. He's the longest one in the office." and you know, when you say that in English, then I'm like, "Okay, babe, is that how you got the job? That you know, you know, that's not." And of course, she didn't know. She's been saying this forever. So a big part of my job.
You don't know what you don't know.
Exactly. Yeah. Until I show up for coffee and then you're like, oh my God, I'm learning very quickly what I've been doing wrong. And I say it with love in my heart because, you know, I have the same in Dutch.
Yeah. So feedback is crucial.
Absolutely. Yes.
And for the listeners, if you have any people and culture related questions that have to do with your work for a startup or a scale-up, let us know so we can address it in the podcast. It can be a question for us or for our podcast guest. Send us a DM via LinkedIn or an email to info@peopleminds.com. So if you decided to, well, to go for it as an organization, you're going to make that transition to English. Where do you start from a very practical point of view, and how to get everyone on board?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I think it's really important to have a sit down with your employees to explain the why behind the what. We want to go into English because this is what we want to reach. This is the new target group that we can, this is how we can scale up. This is how we can get more investors or more in the media. Make sure that everyone first is on board with your mission, you know, because some people might think, you know what, this is not a goal I share. It's really important to explain the why behind the what first. The second thing is to really ask, and how do you feel about that? How do you feel about doing this in English? So many people, you know, have called me for training for my Rock Your Business program or for my new program, Communication Nation. And I'm like, well, have you talked to your employees? No, I just want to give this to them as a gift. You really have to make sure that people are just as motivated as you are. And that means investing in training. That means sending them an intake form where they have to evaluate themselves really honestly. And one of my intake questions, I have digital intakes, and I'm very clear in my questioning, is what do you think is holding you back from English?
Yeah.
And so many people say, I'm afraid of making a mistake, or I'm afraid of sounding stupid. And it has nothing to do with what you've learned. It's how you feel.
Yeah. And that's what you can relate to with the example
100%,
that you just...
Because it doesn't matter how much grammar you know, how many words you know, if you don't feel great about using them, that's where we always start.
But is it also then accepting that there will be maybe a loss of quality first?
I think you have to be willing to accept that.
It and feels like inevitable.
Right, right. Because it took you a long time to develop the skills you have. And in English, it's another game. You know, you have home games and you have an away game. If you choose to play the game in English, the rules have changed because you're now leaving your bubble, and other things you have to be willing to accept. And that means starting out your business mails with an icebreaker or a thank you instead of saying the contract is attached. You know, you can get away with that in Dutch, by deze, and you send the bijlage. But in English, we're really into framing. We're really into packaging. We're really into softening the blow when it comes to giving bad news, for example. In Dutch, it's a doe maar gewoon of dat kan niet culture, and you can throw out these expressions. But that's not going to work in English. We're really into first agreeing and then disagreeing. There's, you know, that you might have a good point there, but I disagree. Or instead of saying, we can't pay for that, you can say, I'm afraid that's out of the scope of our budget this quarter. That really is a professional way of saying no, but leaving someone with their dignity. And I think, you know, I was just in Brooklyn in November and I was in my Uber. And the Uber driver said, so, you know, you're from here, but where do you live now? I said, well, I live in near Amsterdam. And he said, those Dutchies, they're real straight shooters. They say it like,
yes,
people in Brooklyn are even saying the Dutchies, they're straight shooters. They say it like it is, you know, they don't cut the crap there. It's like,
So it's really something you need to learn.
I feel.
Yes. And now, Buffy, we have 5 statements for you. And you can only reply with agree or disagree.
Yeah, it's kind of a pressure cooker.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
The pressure.
Are you ready for it?
The pressure
is on.
Absolutely.
Okay, let's get this going.
Are you going to do the first one?
Okay. First one. As a startup with growth ambitions, you need to put all documents in English from day one.
Disagree.
Okay. A switch can only be successful if all managers lead by example by starting to do all their communication in English.
Agree.
If someone doesn't speak English well and finds it difficult to learn, maybe this person is no longer a good fit for the company.
Disagree.
One of the most common mistakes is that we literally translate our own language.
Agree, 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 agree.
Triple agree. When you're in a room with only Dutch people, it is okay if you just speak Dutch.
Oh, agree.
So which of these five statements would you like to elaborate a bit more on your answer?
The one where just because someone doesn't have good English skills, they may not be a good fit for the company. First of all, it depends on how far they are in their career path, how long they've been with you. And I think that we need to, you know, look at everyone's skill sets and kind of put it under a magnifying glass, because maybe, you know, what's the other side of the coin is that you hire someone with great English skills, but maybe they're not as good at that one skill that you really, really need. So maybe their English is great, but their app building skills or their design skills are not as good. You know, you want to get the best people. You really want to make sure it's a right fit.
Can everyone learn it?
Yes.
Yeah, I believe.
Absolutely.
No doubt.
I have never, and I've been doing this, my first English lesson was in 1986. I have never had a situation where someone could not learn. I think maybe you have to find the right coach, the right skills. That's another thing. Everyone learns in different ways. If you are in a school system where you are taught one way only, which is the traditional school system.
Yeah.
If that way works for you, you will excel. You will come to me and say, oh, I got a 9 in English. Fantastic. If that way does not work for how you learn, you will not succeed in the system. That means you will be afraid of failure, and you will think, I'm a loser in English because it didn't go well at school. You could be brilliant in English, but you just did not fit into the educational mold that you were forced to go into.
Interesting angle.
And I have had so many clients, CEOs, people in parliament, who they can tell me, like it happened yesterday, they had to give a presentation in English when they were 18 years old, and one person laughed at them.
Oh, yeah.
And they take that with them forever. They have internalized that memory, and that makes them think, I suck at English. So a big part of my job is that mindset coaching and cleaning up the mistakes that the traditional educational system, where people have been failed by that system.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean you're bad. It just means you didn't fit into the puzzle they forced you to fit into. That's it.
Thank you for sharing that. And I'm very happy with your answer to statement 5, because it always makes me feel extremely awkward when I walk into a room with Dutch people, but then they start speaking English to each other because it's the company language. And I always feel like, why do you do that? It's like switch whenever someone enters the room who isn't native or who doesn't understand Dutch. And it makes me feel awkward when I'm in a room doing that.
But how do you do that then with emails? Because a Dutch person sends an email to another Dutch person, but then you maybe need to forward that email to someone else who doesn't speak Dutch.
Right.
How do you do that? Very practical question.
I think that, there's a difference between live situations and digital situations. So a live situation, it's obviously it can't be, you know, plus one or retweeted or shared, because I'm in the room.
Yeah.
But something for digital, always keep in mind it'll be forwarded, or someone will put it into a presentation, or that someone non-Dutch might be seeing. So do take that into account. Another thing, als ik je toch aan de lijn heb, Dutch people don't realize this, but when you start a sentence with a time indication, you're creating a sense of urgency and a deadline. So if you say, okay, Monday, the presentation needs to be done, an English person will get stressed because they think, okay, the deadline is, you know, Monday is the most important thing. But if you say, hey, could you finish this by Monday afternoon, that kind of relaxes the message a little bit. Makes such a difference.
And it would be wise then to do your communication, at least in emails, in English.
I agree. Yeah.
Even if you send it to a Dutch.
Yeah. But with feedback. So don't just take... your normal email and throw it into Google Translate and say, Deeple. No, let's not play that game. Yeah.
And one moment it happens. You hired your first non-Dutch speaking colleague and you realize that you haven't thought through the consequences. Yeah,
happens a lot.
Yeah.
That's when I get the phone call.
Yeah. How can you as an organization take a more strategic approach in that?
I think you have to be flexible. I think you have to be flexible and you have to be really realistic about what can we expect. Okay, so we've hired this amazing person from Sweden who has the skill set we know, and their English is not at the level, or their English is so much better than ours. I've also had the other side, that we hire people from other countries and they're putting us to shame using words that we don't use. How do you bridge that gap?
Yeah.
I think you really need to communicate. You need to give space for more meetings, more face-to-face discussions, by saying, okay, let's really all get on board on how we're going to address this. Because again, you want that person to feel welcome. You want them to feel mm-hmm. included, and you want to bridge that you know, that onboarding process to make it seamless. But language plays a bigger part in that than people realize. And often people realize that it's a problem when it's too late. They don't anticipate this until, again, they've hired yeah. things, or they've yeah. outsourced it, and they're like, I don't understand what they're saying.
Yeah.
This is really something to be proactive yeah. about.
From my experience now, my biggest fear when I look back at my conversations with founders and management teams is the realistic approach, because yeah. I'm afraid yeah. that they're not being realistic
right.
about what will happen.
Right.
They just assume that everything will remain the same, but right. it won't. And one day you need to switch. So
right.
you need to be prepared.
And when
prepared.
Is that day? Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. And it's a big, I think when you undertake it, a lot of people now, you know, because we have DeepL and Google Translate, all that stuff, people think, oh, it's just so easy. Yeah. I'm just going to get it all. It's all with AI. It's all, but there's so much more to that. And also yeah. there's a huge disconnect. If I see a company with a really great online presence in English, their English is great. They hired native copywriters. Yeah. They're clever with the language. It really does their business justice. And then I show up, and the English that I hear in meetings or when someone meets you is subpar, is under that standard. That's uh-huh. a real disconnect. Mm. So you really have to practice what you preach.
Yeah. So if companies are listening, well, actually people who are working at those companies, of course, what steps should they take, like, tomorrow?
Why wait till tomorrow?
To kick this transition off. Or
today.
Yeah, after listening to this podcast.
Right after this podcast.
What's like the first step?
Grab a coffee and your laptop and sit down. This is how it's going to roll. I think you need to do some mind mapping of, okay, we want to go into English. Why? Write out every single goal you have about what English will do for you that Dutch won't, right? Once you have all of your whys, then you get your team on board. You say, okay, this is what we want to accomplish. Who feels good about this? Who doesn't feel good about it? Start right there. And the people who don't feel good about it, ask them why. What do you think is holding you back? Did you have a shitty experience at school? Did you not get the right tools? Have you never gotten professional English training before? Once you identify where the problem areas are in the team, and not, you know, not problem areas, learning opportunities, that's how you can really build it up in a way that makes everyone feel valued.
Yeah.
And when people feel valued, when they see you're willing to invest in them, they will fly so high. They will feel so great. And that creates more value for your company in the end. The better they are, the better you are.
Crystal, you've been biting your brains out quite a bit these past few months.
Is that actually a good sentence?
I think it is. Not sure. Buffy's nodding, so she's okay with it. So tell us a bit more. What are you currently doing?
Oh, yes. I started my PhD last year, and I just finished my first paper. Yes, I celebrate.
Applaud. People applaud.
Yeah, absolutely. I celebrated Christmas behind my laptop, more or less.
Sounds kind of sad.
Yeah, but I finished my first one, and it's about growing pains during scale-up hypergrowth.
Interesting title.
Yeah.
Okay, but now first discussion probably is, what the hell is hypergrowth?
Okay, are you ready for some PhD nerd
stuff? Do you have
nerd
formal? Okay, let's go ahead.
Let's dive into it. Well, there are a ton of different definitions, like growth rates between 50% till even several hundreds or thousands of percentages per year. But it's basically, well, rapid scaling within a super short period of time. And what people perceive as, well, extreme and quite disruptive.
Oh my God, you're starting to sound like a scientist. You're getting boring.
I know. But, well, no matter the exact definition, there's basically one thing for sure, or actually three things for sure, is that time pressure plays a huge role in hypergrowth firms. Yeah. Well, to stay ahead of competitors, of course, and to become or stay the market leader. And because of that, hypergrowth has to take place because you want to become that
Makes sense.
Market leader. And also the other way around, because of that hypergrowth, there's a lot of time pressure to, well, to take decisions, execute certain tasks, hiring people, etc., etc. So time pressure is like a big...
an incredible pace.
Element, yes. And of course, there's continuous change and a scarcity of resources, like financial resources, but also, I can't believe that I'm going to say this, human resources. I hate that sentence.
That's the forbidden word.
Yes, I know, I know. But a scarcity of resources, that's for sure. And if you as an organization are in hypergrowth mode, these three things, so the time pressure, the scarcity of resources, and that continuous change, those three things are like important elements in the process. Yeah, that leads to internal growing pains in, for example, culture, leadership, and team composition, but I won't dive into that right now.
That's a lot of information, right? If you need to share everything.
Yeah.
So you've been on this for 1 year already?
Yeah. And at least 3 more years to go. And
respect.
I'm still looking for 2 founder-led hypergrowth scale-ups that want to participate in my research.
Now, who wouldn't want to participate?
Yes. So if you're interested or want to know more, send me an email to crystal@peoplemasterminds.com.
You just gave your personal email address.
Yes.
And Buffy, thanks.
There was a lot of information, but super inspiring. Very, very insightful. Thank you so much, Buffy.
Thank you so much for doing this in English. You know, this is creating a new template for walking the talk. I'm so proud of you for doing this, and I hope others will follow. And for those of you who have comments about their English, sit and have a coffee with me, because I'd love to hear how good your English is.
Here's your challenge. Yeah. Where can listeners find you and more information about Communication Nation?
Oh, well, I'm so glad you asked. I've spent 3 years working on Communication Nation, which is the world's first 3 years behind the scenes while working full time. Yeah. Go to communication-nation.com. There you can see everything. There's 7 courses. There's a presentation playground. There's pronunciation paradise. There's a grammar gateway. There's a vocabulary valley. It's also with monthly sessions
vocabulary
with me.
Valley.
Vocabulary valley. That's where you can learn to triple your vocabulary,
nice.
Among other things. There's over 100 video lessons. And what's great about it is you can learn in the way that works for you. There are audio fragments, there's transcripts, there's workbooks with reflective questions, there's quizzes, there's live events. There's nothing like it in the world, and I'm very proud of it, and I cannot wait to share it with
like
you.
Sounds like a blast.
Communications.apianation.com. Communication-nation.com.
If you want to read the highlights of this podcast episode, go to peoplemasterminds.com/brainbites to subscribe to our regular Brain Bites. We have one more question for you as our listener. Could you rate this episode in your favorite podcast app and subscribe yourself if you haven't already? Then you'll stay up to date with the latest episodes and more people will be able to find us.
Thank you again, Buffy.
Thank you.
And thank you until the next one.